start with 2932. We have. Ingrid has been working on amendments. And then we have someone here who has been invited to offer additional, who has had a request to offer additional amendments. Let me find my bill. Where is Ingrid? Well, we don't need that.
He was right in the hallway. Oh, there they are.
Okay, why don't you come up and share with us the your request for the A2 amendments, please.
Senator Cohen, members of the committee, my name is Kate Brown, and I'm here today on behalf of, actually tonight, on behalf of the Women's Rights Coalition. We have proposed amendments set forth in 2932A2, I believe, that would include medical facility under facility with regards to the arson. In addition, under Section 5, we have a person committing the crime of interfering with a medical facility when the person damages, vandalizes, or steals any property located in a medical facility or enters a medical facility with intent to destroy, alter equipment, obtains access to a medical facility under false pretenses, physically detains a person who is attempting to enter a medical facility, or impedes access to a medical facility. The coalition is very supportive of these amendments. What it would do is essentially give law enforcement officials another tool for arresting and enforcing people, prohibiting people from blockading or impeding access to a medical clinic, from destroying or attempting to destroy the functioning of the clinic, or from hindering the process of the clinic. And we believe they're very important, and we urge you to pass them.
Thank you. That question for Kate.
Yes, Madam Chair, I just was watching the news. We didn't see a need to caucus tonight for some reason. I don't know. And I was just wondering, I just saw on there that some animal rights group had burned down an Oregon State facility in Corvallis that was doing research on animals and caused great damage to it. They spray painted the place up and all that sort of thing, and I just wondered if we have sufficient laws to take care of people that do that, regardless of what you might feel about their feelings.
We have a bill in committee.
Do we?
It's come, that I'm willing to schedule for hearing if you want.
2934.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but this
I just saw a medical facility. I know where this bill's going. I understand it. Yeah. Okay.
And actually, Senator Brockman, we actually looked at that bill, the option.
Okay.
But it relates to animal facilities and it doesn't have.
Well, that's medical research, though, yeah. Kind of.
Well, but it doesn't.
Okay. I just wanted to put that out there for what it was.
Okay, we have it here.
Okay.
Madam Chair,
if you like, we'll schedule it on Wednesday.
Madam Chair, Senator Brockman, there's also a similar bill that's scheduled for hearing in Senate or House Judiciary tomorrow, House Bill 2786, that would deal with animal facilities.
Okay.
So we've got that online. Okay.
Ready for motion?
Madam Chair, I'll move the A2 amendment.
Okay, Senator Hanby moves the A2 amendments. Are there objections to that motion? There is a hand and gross bill here. With those amendments, doesn't include the other amendments, though, right?
Madam Chair, it does. It includes all the amendments, and the A2 version that you have should be with hand-engrossed
hand
additions
engrossed,
to the A2. So that includes all of the amendments.
Okay, great. Senator Hanby's moved the A2 amendments. And Ingrid, would you go through the other amendments that we've sort of discussed with the proponents of the legislation and I think worked out some. Gets them pretty close to where they started, at least, and it takes out some of the institutional issues and makes them not quite an A felony, but a C felony. So I'll ask Ingrid to go through the the balance of the amendments.
Madam Chair, looking at page one of the hand and gross version of the bill, in line 13, a new type of arson one is created by this measure, which would occur when there was an intentional damaging of property, either the person's own property or the property of another, and that the person who damaged the property also recklessly caused serious physical injury to a firefighter or a police officer who was in the line of duty relating to the fire. So there would be basically two states of mind required: intent to damage property and reckless disregard of the safety of a firefighter or a police officer. And in addition, there would have to be serious physical injury resulting to one of those individuals, and that would be a new category of arson in the first degree. There's a deletion from line 16 through 19, which would have, in the bill presented by the proponents, created a third category of arson one, which would have been committed by any person intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly damaging property by starting a fire, by burning that property while committed to an institution and either being transported to and from the institution or residing inside the institution. That's been deleted. Thirdly, in line 27 and page 1, the proponents had sought a new kind of Class C felony criminal mischief: any property that was damaged by starting a fire. And the amendments combine that element with the institutional to create a Class C felony of criminal mischief in the first degree if a person intentionally damages property by starting a fire in an institution while the person is committed to and actually confined in the institution. If indeed a person were to do that and that act caused created danger to other persons, it would be arson one, but the assumption is that there will be an inability to prove that danger to other persons, so then it would be a Class C felony. And then finally, with respect to the proponent's measure on page 2, lines 18 to 23 have been deleted. That would have created an offense of aggravated criminal mischief, which would have been punishable as a Class B felony. Sentencing guidelines currently have classify in crime category 6 criminal mischief with damage exceeding $50,000. So in terms of punishment, that is already covered. Although this would also raise the offense from a C felony to a B felony.
Okay, the dash two amendments have been moved. Hearing no objections.
Not yet. On page 2A here of this engrossed version, line 24V, excuse me, Paul is killing me. This section shall not be interpreted to prohibit any lawful picketing in connection with a labor dispute. By specifying a labor dispute, does that prohibit any other picketing for any other reason?
Madam Chair, Senator Brockman, no, and in line 24P, it refers to action as not including any form of speech, and mm-hmm. picketing would be a form of speech as long as it did not physically interfere with access to the facility.
Well, I'll reserve the right to change my mind, but I'll object to the amendment.
Okay, let's... Anyone else want to register their objections? Make sure we note Senator Brockman is objecting to the A2 amendments. Appreciate that. Thank you, Senator Brockman. Okay. Senator Hanbury moves House Bill 2932 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman?
No.
Senator Bunn? Senator Hanbury?
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker?
Aye.
Senator Springer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill? Chair Cohen?
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Okay, let's, we have You want to go right to habeas corpus then?
Sure.
Confused firefighters here. We have some confused firefighters.
Yeah, I bet we do.
Now you see it, now you don't.
Still there. Still there. We have a compromise, actually. Ingrid.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is the habeas corpus revision measure proposed by the Judicial Department. Ross Shepard is not present, but he did work with the Judicial Department on some final amendments, which are incorporated in the -A1 amendments and in the hand-engrossed version of the bill, which has been distributed to members. And basically, what this bill would do at this point is to sort of bifurcate the different kinds of habeas corpus proceedings, so that if one were to challenge the legality of confinement, the procedure is very much like it is under current law and conforms to the practice which is the basis, the original historical basis of the writ. It substitutes, however, instead of an automatic issuance of the writ, a show cause proceeding. The amendments include a provision which provides that if the court is considering whether or not to have the petitioner present in court, one of the factors that ought to be considered is the basis for the writ, and if indeed the person is challenging the legality of confinement, that is a factor that would weigh in favor of the court having the individual brought to court. Secondly, there would be no ability for a judge to summarily dismiss a petition based upon a claim of lack of legal basis for confinement. Then, with respect to those petitions which challenge the conditions of confinement, the show cause proceeding would apply. There would be no sort of provision that the court ought to have the defendant present, although the petitioner certainly could be brought if the court felt that were appropriate. And again, in this setting, the court could grant a summary dismissal based upon the petition itself, or after receiving a response to the order to show cause, the court would again be empowered to grant a summary dismissal in those circumstances. So it creates sort of parallel procedures depending on the basis for the petition.
Yeah, we have, this is the bill that the Attorney General and the Chief Justice came in. This bill has been managed throughout, and we do have agreement. If anybody want to comment further on it?
Roy Pulvers is present and could talk about any aspect of the bill.
I appreciate the work that people put in on it is what I want to say to the people who, in a good faith effort, they've met with Ross Shepard and they've really worked it through, and I thank them for doing it. I don't have any questions that would make me question that we aren't kind of going down the right track.
Yeah.
And doing that. So I'd entertain a motion.
I'll move the amendment.
Thank you. Senator Shoemaker has moved the A1 amendments to House Bill 2391. Discussion. We hope we can spend a little time to read them over to understand better, but I think They've been through it, and we couldn't add any more to it. Thank you. Call the roll, please.
I'll move the bill.
Yep.
As amended.
Oh, excuse me. We haven't... Objections to the dash one amendments of House Bill 2391. Hearing none, so ordered. Okay, Senator Shoemaker, who moves House Bill 2391 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman?
Aye.
Senator Bunn? Senator Hamby?
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker?
Aye.
Senator Springer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill? Chair Cohen?
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Okay. 2219?
It's just here.
Okay, that one we don't need. We're going to take that one up tomorrow.
2219?
2219 is a vehicle bill unnecessary for the moment. 2407. This is new, yeah. 2407. Oh, this is a sex offender registration.
Registration.
Okay. And do we have some additional amendments. Okay, Ingrid?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this bill, the Ann Gross version of the bill, does the following things. It creates lifetime registration requirement for adult sex offenders, including offenders who were convicted in other states. Current Oregon law requires a 5-year registration for adults and does not apply to persons convicted in other jurisdictions. It creates a procedure for petitioning from relief from the registration requirement 10 years after the date of conviction. It expands the categories of offenses for which registration is required to add incest, using a child in a display of sexually explicit conduct, dealing in depictions of a child's sexual conduct, transporting child pornography into the state, paying for viewing a child's sexually explicit conduct, compelling prostitution, and promoting prostitution. And among the materials which were handed out are copies of statutes which define those each of those offenses. In addition, the bill adds a requirement of annual registration so that an offender would have to send in an annual report about the address and so forth, identifying information, and would have to provide notice of change of address within 30 days. It makes failure to register a crime or a violation, depending on the circumstances, a Class C felony, a Class A misdemeanor, or a violation. Under current law, the only enforcement provision is the fact that failure to register is a violation of parole or probation conditions. The bill would allow the juvenile court to require a juvenile sex offender to register for the period of time determined by the court to be appropriate for that offense. It sets up a procedure for allowing a victim of a sex offense to call a toll-free Oregon State Police number to learn information about the convicted offender, when the offender is scheduled for release, and that sort of information. It penalizes the misuse of that information by the victim and the publication of that information. So the victim would be precluded from publishing the information or misusing it. Misuse is not specifically defined. It makes the Oregon State Police the agency responsible for maintaining the registry. And finally, it sunsets the entire registration law in 1997, including existing provisions. The bill, as it is in its A engrossed form, does not provide specifically for registration by the offender during the period that he or she is on probation, active probation or parole supervision. And I think the assumption was that the probation or parole officer would do the reporting on behalf of the compliant because at this point in all probation and parole conditions, it's required that there be a report of a change of address. But the bill does not provide for that. It leaves a sort of a gap. And the amendments would address that by basically requiring that the person in charge of supervising a person on active parole or other supervised release enter into the LEDS system any change of address of the parolee or person being supervised, so that this would not be duplicatory of the offender providing that same information. And in order to effectuate that, certain language changes would have to be made so that the obligation of the offender to report would not arise until that person was released from active supervision.
I guess the question I would have is, are we going to move, I guess I need to talk about whoever is interested in this bill, with respect to the amendments, was the intention really the case that we're going to rely only on self-reporting during the time of post-prison supervision? And I guess I'm for one of those people not willing to leave that to chance, because there are other states that have self-reporting that they don't get a very come on up. So whatever that's worth, I'm happy to where we are on this. I think we need to establish clearly the record what the intention is.
I'm Vern Fotz, and I chair the Board of Parole and was involved in the development of this proposed change. And the intent is that a person who leaves the institution after having committed and been incarcerated for a sex crime will be registered at the time he returns to the community. That will be done by the parole officer. This is in cases of parole, post-prison supervision. That ensures that the person's name is entered into the system, that the identifying information is entered into the system, and that the description of the crime and how it comes down is entered into the system. That was the intent of this. And then after that period of active supervision, the person moves out from
after
under.
After the period of active supervision. Okay.
And the person is then more or less on his or her own in the community. Then they're required to report through the mechanism established by and with the state police for the remainder of the period.
I think we're clear on what the intention is, and Russ, why don't you...
Madam Chair, the only concern that I would have with that is that there would be a mechanism for a criminal penalty beyond simple violation of parole should that person fail to register for some reason.
But that's a six-month flat piece. That's pretty severe.
Madam Chair, this would be a technical violation, and I think the rules of the State Sentencing Guidelines Board indicate a 90-day.
Is it 90 days then?
90 days.
Well, whatever you want to do, you want to take them back through the court if they don't report to whom? Their parole officer?
Well, it would be almost impossible for them not to report to their parole
officer. That's what
officer
I'm trying to say.
Unless they just absconded supervision and they were gone. You have to report. It's a requirement. And if you don't report, then you come back. And you come back again if you need to bring you back again, and so on.
I guess, see, Russ, if you got that going for you, I don't know what...
Madam Chair, if there's an assurance that there's going to be swift and sure action taken, then that's fine.
I would think that post-prison supervision people are going to be alerted sufficiently to these kind of offenders that they're not going to fool around with them. I guess, wouldn't you say that, Vern?
Yes.
I mean, you're going to be looking at these people like hawks, I would think.
Well, we watch them pretty closely, and a sex offender now who violates any condition is subject to return, and many come back. We bring them back.
Yeah. So,
Madam Chair, Elise Clausen was here earlier today, and she couldn't stay, but she did ask me to express her support for this scheme that Mr. Fotz has just described and her preference for not having dual reporting responsibilities, because she was fearful that different information would get confused that way.
Okay, so you are supportive. I guess Elise is supportive of the A2 amendments.
Yes, Madam Chair, I talked with her today. And
that will, that they do facilitate what you just shared for the record. Okay.
I'll move the A2.
Okay, Senator Hanby's moved the A2 amendments. Are there objections to Senator Hanby's motion?
Before these folks run away.
Yeah, we're going to need you some more, I think, on the rest of this bill. Ingrid has more amendments, right?
I don't.
You don't?
No.
I thought we were going to, okay. I have a question.
Want to gavel the A2?
Yes, okay, the A2, thank you, Senator, are adopted. On line 7, we had some question, no sooner than 10 years after the date of termination from supervision.
Delete
it
conviction.
Now says conviction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Don't we want to do that?
Page 3.
If y'all will look on page 3. We decided that 10 years after conviction could actually be a requirement after they've still in the joint.
Mm-hmm. Still be they could still be incarcerated 10
That's
years
what
after
I'm saying.
Conviction.
But they
so
would, you
know. I think that we really need to make that amendment. Wouldn't you agree?
And change that to sooner than 10 years after the date of
termination from supervision.
Active supervision.
You want to say active supervision? Okay. Termination from active supervision. Is that okay with people out there? I think it is.
It is. It would be fine with me. You, under Sentencing Guidelines, active supervision ends at the end of the third year.
Okay.
As you know.
Well, that's where we are. Actually. There are objections to the Chair's Amendment on line 7. Hearing none, so thank you, Senator Hanby.
Madam Chair,
okay, Ingrid?
One further technical amendment on the same page, and this might be a good time to do it. On line 5, it says the name and address of the Juvenile Department. The Law Enforcement Data Systems request that simply say, and the identification of the Juvenile Department. They identify them by numbers, not by name and address, and they don't know what they would do with that information.
Okay, which of these bills, at some point I was going to raise the issue about the registration of juveniles.
That's in this bill.
That's in this bill, so we didn't really get those amendments prepared, right?
No, I'm sorry, I didn't prepare specific amendments dealing either with which offenses should be included. The committee did raise questions about some of the offenses included on page 1 of the bill. And the propriety of...
Yeah, I thought we were going to... Yes, okay.
We moved from 5 years on rape, sodomy, penetration, and sexual abuse to lifetime for those, plus really some more, in a lot of ways, more serious offenses in terms of the person's conduct. Is it rape in any degree? Some lower degrees of rape are almost not sexual abuse, are they? How far down does that go?
Well, I guess my concern is the issues
harsh.
Of pornography here that are not, that are really not active against person crimes. But that's, you know, do you register for those?
Madam Chair, if I may just comment.
Yes.
That supports the industry. Okay. And the industry uses the child.
Okay, then let's move to the juvenile issue. If you have...
Oh, okay.
My concern on Section 5 is if we have a bill that was going to recommend 5-year extension of, what do we call it? Help me, Ingrid. It's late.
Informal disposition.
Informal disposition. We're not going to move that bill because we had people objecting to it. We now have a situation where, depending on the county, if a juvenile did the same crime and they were actually formally adjudicated in Multnomah County and they were not adjudicated in Clackamas County, they did the same crime, there would be no way for the court to request them would be unlikely because there wasn't a formal adjudication in Clackamas County. So the same kid would be asked to register in Multnomah County because they were an adjudicated case, and in Clackamas County they wouldn't have the registry. And frankly, I have a concern about that. I think it's not good policy, and I'd almost like to delete that section for now and come back to it and ask them to register when we get this whole question during the interim sorted out about, do we adjudicate them all? Do we, at what stage do we or do we not expunge? Who's a victim, who's whatever, and then deal with the registration. And I'm not opposed to registration, having juveniles register, I think, until we sort out. But I'd like some comments from whoever wants to come up and talk about that.
Madam Chair, Mary Hoyt may want to comment on part of that. I would say that I certainly would not want to lose the registration for adults.
Right. Oh, I'm not talking about that.
And I think that it is important if we're going to require a person in one county to register for a crime, that a person who commits the same crime in another county should also be required to register. That should be held, those people should be held accountable equally across
right.
the state.
I'm concerned that we're not, that by, but that we're not really able to effectuate that with the juvenile.